let's get this party started. Welcome to Puffcast, your Harry Potter happy place. This is episode 43 on November 10th, 2021. And I am your host, Melanie, but also now known as Princess Elowyn Fern from the Royal House of Seelie.
And I am Juliana, Princess Dawn Hawthorne Seelie. And we are the daughters of King Aurorian. Yes, we are now fairies. And today, we also dressed up, friends, and I wore my dog's costume, which just so happened to be what Mel prophesized.
Yes, since today of recording this feedback section of the episode, it is actually Halloween, so we are dressing up a little bit for our own entertainment. And I am Professor Trelawney. And I prophesized, Juliana, that there is pizza in her future. And there Myrtle came along with a slice of pizza around her head.
There's Myrtle, and she is a slice of pizza. And then I put her costume on my head.
Someone of you has once called me, was it Andre, maybe? It was about that I am able to prophesize dates of family and friends' babies.
Oh yeah, I think it was Andre. Yeah.
Here I am,
prophesizing pizza!
I still got it.
Yes.
Oh goodness, what a start. Okay. So, we have a very special episode today, Juliana. Tell us more.
Oh, we do. So we have the one, the only James Peyton on this episode this week. And he is our friend who plays Frank, I was going to say Neville, oh my god, Frank Longbottom in the Harry Potter movies. And he's also pretty much been on set for every single major movie literally ever in the last like 20 years. Listeners, you're really in for a treat when you hear this interview that we have with him, because wow, people don't know how involved he is with these things and how he's been like so close with so many major films.
Mm-hmm. And this interview was actually recorded already quite a while ago.
Yeah.
In mid of July, we had the pleasure to talk to James. And now we are having the perfect spot where we are giving it to you, because the week this episode comes out, Juliana is actually on an adventure and I am on holiday. So...
Yes, I will be making my way down to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter in Orlando for the first time ever.
Yay!
Yes.
That's so exciting.
Yes, we're going to do an episode about my experience there. You guys are going to get to enjoy this fabulous episode with James Peyton while I am being roasted while waiting in line for Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure.
Roasted?
It's pretty hot down in Florida. Okay, so today we have a wonderful guest, and we have the James Peyton joining us. Thank you, James, for joining us.
Yes, it's you.
Oh, good. Oh, hi, everybody.
Yes, you are the James Peyton.
But apparently,
one and only.
What's the rumor? It is me, James Peyton, you know, Frank Longbottom from Harry Potter, the Phoenix Adolf Hitler from Captain America, the First Avenger, Tony Blair from Creation Stories, and of course myself from the award-winning documentary, Who is James Peyton?
Me.
Yeah. My wand.
Oh.
Well, it's Neville's wand, isn't it? Because it goes from Frank to Neville and then it breaks and then, yeah, mine's broken, I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that? Do you feel a huge loss in your soul?
If I had a soul, then I would. But yes, it's very disappointing. And I'm sure you've all been desperate to hear what my Patronus is.
Oh, yes.
Oh, dying.
I mean, if you haven't heard my stories before. Well, it's actually my Patronus is a fighter jet.
Okay, that's a choice.
Well, so I'd hoped. However, I went on the old tippity-tap Pottermore thingy-ma-jiggy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it says that I'm in Gryffindor, which is good because Frank's in Gryffindor.
Okay, checks out.
Right. So I was hoping, you know, for something exciting like a tiger or an elephant or a tapir or something. It's not any of those things. It's a rat.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the fish. The fish is kind of one of the worst ones.
Yeah, I mean, pointless. I'm sure they're great company. But I don't know, rats are, you know, very clever and blah, 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 blah. But come on.
I sense a little bit of disappointment here.
I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to lie to you. Mel. I was disappointed.
Well, that's okay. We advocate for people choosing their own Patronuses here.
I don't know. I think I'd like something amusing.
Something amusing. Mm. Ooh, I'll have to think of something. I mean, you could pick the fighter jet if you want. I don't know if that's amusing as opposed to scary.
And I can't fly a fighter jet.
Yeah, that's also a factor.
As far as I know, who knows? I might get in the cockpit and just be going, yay, look at me. Hmm. I think maybe a tapir, because tapirs are good.
Yeah.
Maybe one of those.
Now, James, we must ask you the most controversial question on our podcast.
Yeah.
So what is your favorite food that is not pizza? Because we assume that pizza is your number one food, given the statistics we have found on this podcast.
I mean, it's a great guess because, you know, pizza is incredible because it can be so many things. Mm-hmm. My favorite food, I sort of don't really do too much dairy because...
Yeah, same.
Actors are awful, generally. So I gave up milk many, many years ago. I felt amazing when I stopped having it. And then somebody gave it to me by accident a while ago, and it was not good.
Yeah, I know that from experience too.
Yeah, same.
So I still have bits of cheese here and there, so pizza's allowed. I like Thai, Japanese, Chinese food.
Yeah.
Ooh. But you cannot go wrong with a steak. But obviously, you know, sustainable things are important these days.
Yeah, for sure.
And that sort of thing. So if I eat meat, I generally only try and have good sourced meat. I don't eat very much. But yeah, if I could have a choice, I suppose that.
Yeah. Okay. So now that we have your fandom ID, we will get into some news. Do-do-do-do-do-do! News! Welcome to the afternoon news, the only afternoon news out there, because we have a weird time of news. And today, on the afternoon news, we have some very exciting things. The first one is that there is a game show, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners have already realized is happening.
We actually talked about it before here on the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it has just officially kind of really come up on the horizon at this point because it's only a month away now, and they revealed who is going to be a contestant on this show, and I actually know a lot of these people who got to be on it. I'm just kind of sad that I never went to audition for this because I feel like I would have been a decent candidate and it would have been pretty fun.
Let's just say you have been very busy with all sorts of other things and concerns.
Yeah, that's probably why it fell under the radar.
Yeah, I'm not surprised this passed you by that you could audition for it. Although I am again in a country where it's not going to be available to me, so I don't know how and if I ever will see this because this is only on certain channels in the US, I think.
Yeah, so the details of this. Harry Potter, Hogwarts Tournament of Houses feels like something out of 2012. It's timed to the 20th anniversary of the first Potter movie, and it's a four-night event that's a game show centered around Harry Potter trivia that has the contestants sorted into Hogwarts houses and features celebrity guests.
Ooh.
The prizes include a $1,000 shopping spree at the Harry Potter New York store, tickets to Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, and a trip to Harry Potter, the exhibition, and a three-night trip to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter Universal Orlando, and an advanced screening of Fantastic Beasts, The Secrets of Dumbledore.
Whoa.
That's what I'd be there for.
Okay.
So we can also join in from home, probably not you, Mel.
No.
And play along too with the trivia. And so these TV show episodes are going to be coming out every Friday, starting November 26th and ending December 10th. So it will be at 8 p.m. I think that's Eastern time on TBS and Cartoon Network Live. It will eventually be on HBO Max early next year. So if you want to watch it in real time, you have to watch it on TBS or Cartoon Network. Or you can watch it whenever it comes to Finland, whenever that is, Mel. I don't know.
Never.
Never. Yeah. Oh. I think this will be exciting to watch, too. It's going to be cool to see them interact with Helen Mirren, who is the host of this trivia contest. And... Mm-hmm. I'm kind of hoping that because this is the 20th anniversary of the films and this year is the 25th anniversary of the books, we're going to get more and more things like this as the year goes on, because so far all I've seen for the 20th anniversary and the 25th anniversary is mostly just this and then the re-release of the original book. And there are kind of small things happening, like Funko Pops that are coming out and stuff like that, but nothing big besides this so far. I have a feeling that Mina Lima is going to be putting out like a special print for like the 25th anniversary of the book. I would really love if Marie Grand Prix, who is the original artist for the American editions of the books, came out and did a really nice piece of artwork for all of us, because her artwork is literally so freaking iconic. I would love that. So, our next little piece of news comes from Bonnie Wright, and this is something I think you will really enjoy, Mel, because she is launching a weekly newsletter that will have environmental things and climate content.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and it's to provide people with, she said, primarily with weekly climate content, and people can expect anything from reflective essays to practical ideas and recipes to implement positive actions into your day-to-day life, which is really exciting.
So that we can all start to
help the environment.
Yeah, that sounds really nice.
Yeah, and I know she was at the G22 summit that was happening this past week as well, and speaking out about all the need for action for climate change. And she's very active in that space.
Yeah.
So she comes from a place of knowing a lot of things. I just think it's really great to see these actors and actresses that we saw as kids kind of evolving into something bigger and better and past being just actors. And this is definitely a great way to use the fan base and celebrity status that you have to do something good. Okay, so that is all we have in the do-do-do-do-do-do news. Thank you for listening to the news, friends. Catch you tomorrow.
And we are jumping right into our feedback. I should be the weather girl just for the feedback then, maybe. For the smaller things.
And now sending it over to Mel in Finland for the weather. Mel, how's the weather looking over there in Finland?
So, quite the opposite of where you are going to very soon on vacation. It is quite cold. We are currently having, let me check, +9°C, which is okay. Oh. It's not too cold, like, but you know. And it is definitely winter. We have changed time last night to winter time already, 1 week before you guys over there in the US.
Oh, yeah.
So it's officially winter time now.
It's 62 degrees right here. It is 16 degrees Celsius here right now.
Okay.
So a little bit warmer than where it is where you are.
All right. So.
Okay. So thank you for the weather update.
Now, off to the feedback section, finally. We have had some fun on our social media with you guys. We asked you, what is your fairy name? And Juliana found some fun
graphics
that she posted where you could find out your own fairy name, and we got some answers here.
Yes, and listeners, we have two different ones, so if you want to use either one of them, or maybe get two names for yourself, go for it. They're not going anywhere. They're going to be up on our socials. So go ahead and play the little game that we have set up.
So we have a small collection of names for you already. From now on, Margaret shall only be known as Flora Light of Aurora, which sounds fabulous.
I mean, that's actually a pretty good name.
It is. It just flows like...
I imagine she's wearing pink, but with yellow accents, because this is Margaret, and she's a very proud Hufflepuff.
Ah, she would be a very cute fairy.
She would!
So, then we have Andre. I have no idea what that is supposed to be, but his name would be Olea Gazer of Thistle.
Andre loves himself a patch of thistle. He's like, wow, let me just look at that thistle all day long. That's a nice piece of thistle you got there. It sounds fancy.
Ay, ay, ay. I hope you're happy, Andre, because that's what you go by now. These fairy names are your names now. There's no going back.
I feel like if everyone gets called by their fairy names, it will increase the podcast in length by like 10. Because instead of just having one name, you have... like, at least
so
three.
Many.
A minimum of three.
The thing is, though, that you at least do need two, because you will see soon why. But first, we still have our friend Charlotte, whose name will be from now on Eden Golden the Moonflower. I can't talk today. Eden
Mel is losing Golden. Her ability to speak.
Eden Golden the Moonflower. A moonflower, that sounds very pretty.
Yeah, that sounds like a nice thing.
But the reason why we do need to have at least a second name for fairy names is because I have the same first name like Margaret does, and that is also Flora.
Oh.
According to this graphic, though, I have to say that...
This graphic has been scientifically proven to be very accurate.
Yeah, but since we both have just gotten a name from our fairy godmother, Auroran, we have official very beautiful names. So this is just for fun and silliness. So these are not our real names. So I would be Flora Meadow of Lark, and I really don't like it.
Yeah, I like your other name a lot better than that one.
Yes, I think so too. And I'm going to stick with that one.
Yeah, I'll probably stick with my other name too, because I am Blossom Twig of Song. Which actually, I don't hate that, but I don't know how to be a Twig of Song.
I mean, song, yeah, that suits you. There we go.
I am a Twig of Song.
Oh, okay, this is just so silly, but I thought we... could include it here, or we thought we could include it here, and I'm looking forward to more of your fairy names that we're probably gonna get.
Yes.
For now, I think that's enough. But did you know, Juliana, that we also got a new 5-star review?
I did. You sent me a screenshot of this and I...
Applause to
us. Like, oh my goodness, that made my day. That's so nice. So Mel, would you like to read this beautiful review?
So what I wanted to do is work with you on this. Have you seen
I did? Oh, okay. That's always colored. Oh, okay. Yes.
Get ready.
We can make this happen. I'm ready. Okay.
So this 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, which you can go and give us too, is by Unikitty, which is a very cute name. A unicorn and a kitty. Ah.
Ooh.
They wrote, "So puffy! Definitely recommend! Huffle!
Puff!
Huffle!
Puff!
Huffle!
Puff!
P.S. I'm a Huffleclaw." Thank you, Unikitty.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for leaving us a lovely and fun to read review.
Yeah, so cheerful.
Yes, and thank you for listening. We appreciate you. And we appreciate all of our listeners. And listeners, if you would like to make our day, honestly, the best way is to either write us an email or leave us a 5-star review with a nice little note. Even if it's just a picture of a badger with a heart. We're cool with that. That sounds good to me, too. Or you can leave us like, know what you could do? Listeners, if you really want to make my day, I would love you to leave a slice of pizza in your review. Just leave the emoji of the slice of pizza, and then you can leave your favorite pizza toppings. And then if you'd like to make my day even more, leave a dumb joke underneath that. I would like the pizza emoji, your favorite topping, and a dumb joke. That's all. Okay.
That
not too complicated
funny.
At all. If one person does that, I will be beside myself now.
And just a quick note to you, Unikitty, if you would like to get a sticker from us,
yes.
We always love to reward everyone who has given us a review on Apple Podcasts. So send us an email at puffcastpod@gmail.com. Let us know it was you and give us your address and we will send a sticker your way. So thank you so much for your review. That was so sweet.
And probably anything else Juliana has lying around her apartment that she kind of wants to get rid of.
Naturally, there will be something else random.
Yeah, it's never just the sticker. That's not how it works.
Shoelaces. Maybe a cookie that she has eaten half.
A chewed piece of gum. Who knows? Hey, that chewed piece of gum could be worth a lot if I ever become famous. Will that ever happen? Probably not. Unless I become famous as the one and only Squost, then I can see it happening. But besides that...
Juliana, since it is still the time of pandemic, we shall hold off on that idea for a while still. But as soon as this is completely squashed and done, we might get back to the idea of sending a chewed gum by you to someone.
Yes. Well, you know, I can send it to them after I get tested at work. So I'll make sure that I'm COVID negative and then I'll send it.
Okay. I guess we are not...
Mel's like, technically that's not...
We will never hear from Unikitty again.
This person is like, oh my God, what did I do?
Oh my goodness. Well, this is what happens when you are giving us 5-star reviews. I hope you're not regretting it right now.
Maybe I'll send my extra pizza crust smell.
Mm, right.
Or maybe, how about an autographed picture of Myrtle dressed up as a slice of pizza?
Autographed by Myrtle herself?
Yeah, I'll give her like a pen or a...
Ah, yeah. Yeah, why not? That sounds great.
I could have her put her paw print in some dirt and then put the dirt on top of her paw and then she can dirt print.
Well, now I want one of those.
Maybe I'll be printing some pictures later today.
Okay. So, I think we are done with our feedback and news section.
Mm-hmm.
And how about, Juliana, we are jumping into our interview with James.
Yes, let's go! Whee!
Woohoo!
That was the news. Thank you very much, people who gave us the news, which was me and Mel.
Didn't see that news report coming. Didn't see it.
Yeah, I mean, it was very quick and there wasn't much substance to it, but that's okay.
like my career.
We beg to differ on that one. But what we'd like to do now, James, is we'd like to get into our main section of the podcast where we would like to interview you.
Oh, that's so, lovely. I'm here.
Yeah, what a coincidence.
You might want to say, who is James Payton? And we are going to tell you today by interviewing you.
Are you? Many have tried. Probably there was some sort of documentary.
That would just be a godsend.
Right?
How could we be so lucky as to have that just gifted upon us?
You know what? I don't know. I guess we're hashtag blessed or something.
Yeah. Spot on.
So maybe we should start from the very beginning and we would like to know, how did you actually become an actor and you are a stand-in and a snow technician? We need to know exactly what that is. Does that really have something to do with snow or not?
All good questions. So when I was growing up, I'd always sort of been into watching older movies, older Hollywood black and white movies and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'd enjoyed performing in school and it was always a thing that I was into, but I was a child. So when you're a child, you do things because you enjoy them, as you should when you're an adult.
Okay. Agreed.
When I was 12, my father died, which is something we cover. That was 1988.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that happened in the morning. And in the afternoon, this is when we had about 3 or 4 channels on the TV. And I was sort of absentmindedly watching TV. I can't do the clicker thing because it was a push button TV back then. I was watching this movie called Francis, which is a Donald O'Connor starring movie. He was in Singing in the Rain.
Mm-hmm.
A black and white movie released in 1950 that was Donald O'Connor and a talking ass, a talking donkey. Anyway, I found myself laughing during this pretty poor time for me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, if you like, it was sort of my epiphany. I watching this thing and had this moment of how am I laughing when the worst thing I could imagine has just happened, and yet here I am laughing.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do that, because if something made 25 years before I was born could take me out of my grief, if even for a moment, then I thought, well, that's got to be worth doing. For me, that was sort of the, looking back, that was the start of the journey. That's when I thought, well, that's what I want to do.
Oh wow.
If I can do something in a performance that people may love, hate that character, feel bad for that character, whatever. But if I can do something that makes people escape from their own reality, even for a spell, then that's got to be a life well lived. And so, as I said, I was 12 when that happened. And I, you know, went through the whole schooling process and the A-level thing that we have here. And then the next stage is university. And I always knew that I wanted to be an actor, but I wanted to do movies or camera work.
Mm-hmm.
Not having anybody in my family or anybody I knew who worked in that industry. So I went to do university and did something completely unrelated to, you know, ostensibly get a background in something else in case it didn't work out. Did that degree, passed, but with not a very good result because I didn't really do the work because my mind was elsewhere. Left university and then moved to London and started saying yes to things as much as I possibly could. I was doing my first thing was in about 1997, I think. It was a show called Special People that was an English language show that was going to be shown in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
That was going to be my big break, along with me and a bunch of other people. Unfortunately, it turned out the executive producer and who was also the director was not a very nice person at all.
Oh, God.
Obviously, that fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an interesting sort of wake-up call. But yeah, as I said, I moved to London and said yes to things. And I did a movie in 98 called The Clandestine Marriage. And one of the assistant directors remembered me. I mean, you can barely unblink and miss it in that movie. But One of the assistant directors remembered me and phoned me the following year and said, did I want Fancy being a stand-in for the BBC? And I said, yeah, all right, great. I knew what a stand-in does. You essentially do the lighting and camera moves around that person instead of the star. And it turned out I was pretty good at it.
Hmm.
And that became, for a long time, my sort of standby job to allow me to stay in the industry and to learn not only my craft, but also the process of making movies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what happened is, because of my skill set as an actor, when we don't have certain actors on set,
mm-hmm.
then I will fill in for them. So I'll do the offlines off camera.
Oh, okay.
So certainly for Fantastic Beasts, I did the three Fantastic Beasts movies for Dan Fogler, for Colin Farrell, for Johnny Depp, and for Jude Law. So oftentimes in the second movie, in Crimes of Grindelwald, when they're in the round at the end and Johnny's giving his whole speech about the greater good and all that sort of stuff,
mm-hmm.
every time the camera's not on Johnny, it's on me. It's on the other cast. I'm doing the offlines for Eddie, for Ezra, for Dan, for whoever.
Oh.
Yeah.
On all three movies, I did that and the Spider-Man Far From Home and a bunch of other movies down the years. Life with Jake Gyllenhaal, Ryan Reynolds, we did all the offlines for them because they were all on comms. So when mm-hmm. we don't have the actors, I'm filling in for Rebecca Ferguson. I'm covering the different dialogue. So it's been pretty good to me over the years. And yes, snow. This is what people are fascinated by.
Mm-hmm.
So I am a fully qualified, if you can believe that, snow technician or winter effects technician for a company called Snow Business International. And we do fake snow and winter effects for film and television and commercials and so forth.
Yeah.
So everybody loves the movie The Holiday, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
You're Cameron Diaz. So when you see the snow in that, that's us.
Okay.
Oh.
So yeah, if you think of a movie or a show with great snow in it, it's us. If you think of a movie with terrible snow.
Terrible snow. That's not James' work, no.
No.
Sometimes it is terrible. those are my three jobs. And as I said, I've been really lucky because I've been able to, all of my sort of other jobs have been in the film industry. That's allowed me to stay mm-hmm. in and to end up after 25 years or whatever, knowing an awful lot of people in an awful lot of capacities. And therefore becoming a recognizable face on set and a trusted member of the crew, which is as surprising to me as to you, I'm sure. You know, you can't work with people like Robert Downey or Jude or Johnny or Ezra or any of the actors that I've stood in for or worked with, or Anthony Hopkins. You can't not learn from these people. If you're not learning from these people, you're doing something horribly wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it's sort of an unusual way that I'm not making coffee or anything, or to stay in and around the film industry for 20 something years,
mm-hmm.
which is luck rather than design. But the harder I work, the luckier I become.
See, I think this role of being a stand-in is almost actually cooler than being an actor in all these movies, because it gives you so much autonomy to move around from all these different films and also just meet so many people. Because I feel like if you're acting in one movie, your time is very specifically spent on this one movie for such a long amount of time. And you're like, you're only with like a set number of people because you're an actor working with certain people in certain scenes doing certain things.
Sure.
Whereas if you're you get to be in all the scenes of all the movies, doing all the things, because you are the person behind the camera reading all these lines for all these actors. So you get to interact with so many more people and learn so much more, too, I would assume.
Yeah, it's, as I say, it's sort of a wonderful educational process. I mean, you know, you can go to film school and you can learn mm-hmm. the process of making movies there. You know, if you want to see how it really is, then be on set.
Mm-hmm.
I've been so fortunate that I've worked with actors more than once. I did the two Sherlock Holmes movies with Robert Downey. Jude I've known since we did The Holiday, because I was doing the snow on The Holiday, and then obviously he did the two Sherlocks, and then we did the two Fantastic Beasts that he did.
Mm-hmm.
I think people get confused and say, oh, you're friends with them. I said, I'm not there to be their friend. That's not mm-hmm. my job. I'm there to do my job. These people are colleagues.
Yeah.
I do have, you know, an awful lot of friends who are actors from Potter or from, you know, either life. But yeah, I'm doing a job. So as glamorous as all the name dropping sounds, they're just people that I work with, and they're like you or I. We're all human beings and we all breathe oxygen, and
yeah.
They're just normal people too, so
yeah.
People easily forget that.
Most of them are.
Any secret people you wanna drop? I can cut this out.
There are a few people, not necessarily actors, although some do both, that I wouldn't particularly choose to spend time with.
Yeah. I guess that's only natural. I mean, you can't always like everyone and get along with everyone. I mean, we all know that.
Yeah, I mean, generally speaking, the people in the play are interesting people and want to be there and are there because they're good. Because when you cast a movie, you cast the actors, but you also cast the crew because you need people who are good at their jobs and, of course, affable. But there are some people that I wouldn't choose to work with again because they're just not very nice people.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't reveal any names. It's literally two or three people that I would not choose. And those names are...
Everyone!
No, I would not expect you to say anything. I wouldn't do that either.
Well, and related to that, too, I feel as though you are very welcome on sets. And I just imagine myself as an actor, just given what you said, seeing you and just feeling a sense of calm because you bring a certain level of professionalism and experience to these sets. The actors, I'm sure, are just relieved. They're like, oh, okay, we're working with James. Like, that's great. He's here. That makes me feel a lot better.
See, the Englishman in me says, oh, no, I'm just some guy. But actually, what you say is true. The reality is true that I, particularly on the Fantastic Beasts movies, we've done three of those now.
Mm-hmm.
You see the same cast, the same crew, up to a point. And it's easy because I know that what they're going to do, they know what I'm going to do. It becomes a job and it's a tough job and it takes over your life, but you're with people you trust. So it's an awful lot easier. And what tends to happen, which I always sort of found quite interesting, is that you get a lot of sort of young PAs starting out in the movies, and we've had them on each of the Fantastic Beasts movies certainly. And at some point, and I always try and make people feel welcome if they're new, because it's a lot sort of take in. So I make sure that I try and engage with these people because I had my first day too.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
They'll often come point, and in fact, every one of the Beasts movies, a PA has come up to me and said, James, why do I know you? So you do a list of the movies that you've worked on recently. I say, no, I haven't done any of those. You think, oh, I know what this is. And you say, are you a Harry Potter fan? They're like, yeah, I love it. It's my favorite. They grew up with it. You're like, and they say, and you say, do you know who Neville is? And they go,
oh, it's you.
Interestingly, it happens. Alison Sudol said to me on the third movie, we were shooting a scene that obviously we can't talk about because it's fine. And she came up to me and she said, James? I said, Alison. And she said, you're Frank Longbottom, aren't you? I said, I am, Ali. Yeah, I am. Yeah, it's a sort of a funny thing that this thing I shot a million years ago follows me around every day.
Yeah.
Which is it's sort of wonderful. It's what's not to like about that. I don't quite know why.
We recently had a chat with John Campling, and he said the same thing, because everyone knows this scene where he is playing the Death Eater and stopping the train in the movie. People usually don't recognize the person right away or don't know the name of the person. They just know this short scene when he is then going to say that, oh yeah, that's me. And they're just having exactly that reaction that you described right now, that a light bulb goes off. And
yeah, it sort of goes to show the power of any fandom.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'm in one of the movies for 30 seconds, but it's something that I talk about every day since.
Yeah.
Because it means so much to people. And it's the only time you see Frank and Alice, and these moments mean so much to people.
Mm-hmm.
Which goes back to what I was saying at the beginning. If I can do a thing that makes people escape their own grief or distracts them from whatever they're going through, then that's a life well lived. And unfortunately, I did that at 30, so I could probably retire now, couldn't I?
Goal achieved. Okay, goodbye. Time to go find a nice beach to relax on.
Yeah, I've got enough money to last the rest of my life if I die tomorrow.
Yeah, me too. If I die tomorrow, I think I definitely have enough money to live another day.
Right. It's that part of my career, that Potter part of my career, continues to give. It is the gift that keeps on giving. We get to go all over the place and meet people and have larks with our friends.
Yeah.
And it's honestly, it's brilliant. I highly recommend it.
You're definitely one of those faces that is very well known in the Harry Potter fandom, and it seems to me you are very active in it. Despite that you had only this short scene, you are very present and everyone knows you. Everyone loves to chat with you. So we are definitely very happy that you are here and taking the time to talk with us about this. How did you get involved with the fandom? Is it just through your work, or have you read the books yourself and you love these stories?
When I did Potter, I was 30.
Mm-hmm.
I was 30. when I did Potter. So, you know, I was aware of it. I knew that it was a massive thing. I'd seen the movies, I'd read some of the books. And then when I had my opportunity to be involved in it, God, at least I'm not literally the only actor in the UK who hasn't been involved in a Potter. And it was great. And for me, it was, okay, well, I've done this thing. It's great. It might boost my career a little bit, but it's such a short thing that it's a nice thing to have. And then I got a call a couple of years later. Yeah, a couple of years after the movie came out, somebody called me and said, how did I fancy doing a Comic Con? And I said, yeah, sounds good. In Birmingham. And Matt was there, which was lovely, because that was the first time we'd ever met. I mean, we've met since, obviously. And I thought, well, this is all right. I quite like this. People coming up and wanting to talk. I don't know if you noticed, but I quite like chatting. Right, it was really rather lovely. And I suppose I was relatively popular at that one. And then every so often, somebody would call me or send an email saying, you know, do you want to come and do this Comic Con somewhere? And I'd often say yes, because I enjoyed doing it. It's fun to meet people and sort of go off and have a little adventure around the country, around the world. I signed with my current agent, Kay, in 2018. We'd done a Comic Con in Manchester with Nick Moran, Chris and Josh and Tolga and a bunch of other Potter people. And I was sort of looking to change agent, because I'd been coasting a little. Things had changed in my life and the door wasn't closed, but I wasn't getting the things or being put up for the things that I like to think that I should have been put up for. I had a chat with this woman and she'd spoken to Nick Moran, because I think the previous night me and Nick had half a glass of wine together.
Approximately.
About that. And we'd sort of been telling the old stories about, you know, did you ever work with so-and-so, and, you know, sort of back and forth. And she'd spoken to Wallace Amond as well. And, you know, obviously Wally was on the first Fantastic Beasts. So I knew Wally. And she said, I'm not sure about this James chap. Is he worth speaking to? And Nick said, oh, yeah, you should definitely speak to James. And Wally was like, absolutely not. He's awful. They both said that, yeah, we should sort of get together and have a chat. So that Comic Con ends, I'd swapped numbers with Kay, and we had a sort of a chat on the phone for 5 or 6 hours about what it was that I was looking for.
Oh my, that's a long chat.
Yeah, I told you I had to chat, don't make any plans. So we'd had this long chat about what we were both after, the direction I'd like my career to go in, and the direction she saw for me and all that sort of things. And we were sort of on the same page. And so I signed with Kay. And then we started to do more and more Comic Con. You know, she was like, you like doing it. You're a good guest. People like seeing, you know, you're quite interactive with people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to do more. And I was like, absolutely. Yeah, I'd do one every weekend if I could, for sure. And so, you know, 2019, we did as many as we could, because
the world was coming to a close the next year and we didn't know it.
yeah, absolutely. It all sort of happened. And then I'd done at this time, of course, we're shooting a documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Oliver Guy Watkins, who I've known for many years, makes documentaries and said, I think your life would be quite an interesting thing to have this sort of level of fame, but also be able to walk down the street, but also go to these places and people to cry at you, whatever. So all through that year, we're making this documentary. They're following me around Comic Cons and the things that I do on a sort of a day-to-day basis for work. And we were doing a Comic Con, me and Chris and Nick, in Watford with a chap called Tony Slattery. And Tony Slattery over here during the 80s, 90s and early 2000s was a very, very big name in improv. And both me and my agent were very excited to meet Tony because we sort of grew up watching his stuff. And we met Tony and he and I got on very, very well. We were sort of playing these games together and sort of mucking about. And I was like, God, I really like, you know, this, we've got this real sort of bond. So the Comic-Con, and that's actually the Comic-Con that Nick said to me, I think you'd make a good Tony Blair, James. I need a Tony Blair for my movie.
Yeah.
This is all in the documentary, this sort of stuff. Tony's people then got in touch with me a couple of days later and said, oh, Tony would like you to come to his show sort of half an hour from where I live. Yeah, great, I'd love to. So I had an audition in town, had to get back to my place and then drive up to Tony's show. And I get there and Tony's not on yet. And he sits me down and he says, oh, are you going to come on to play these improv games? And I said, yeah, of course I will. It seemed to go very well. And then I went up to Liverpool where he had a show sort of once a month where he'd interview a celebrity about their career and then they play an hour of improv games. So we did that and that was a great success. People seemed to respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking to my agent and she says, you know what, I think it would be a good idea for when we do Comic-Con, certainly some of the bigger ones, that we do a show. You know, it's one thing sitting behind a desk and having interaction with people and signing autographs and pictures and so forth. You know, people want to see you perform a lot of time.
Yeah.
Not just sort of judging the cosplay. So she put me and Wally together because mm-hmm. Wally does improv and we started doing these improv shows around the place. We did in Manchester, which is in the documentary, in Peterborough and Ohio yeah, we did these shows, which we very much enjoy doing, and people seem to respond to. I don't know what your question was, but I've gone off on a tangent, haven't I? You know, the I suppose what fans seem to like, certainly from my experience, isn't necessarily they all want a moment. You know, Chris Rankin speaks about this incredibly eloquently, where it's not about the autograph or the picture. It's about the interaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
true.
It's about giving part of you to them so they have a memory. Mm-hmm. And the photo and the autograph.
Yeah, that's just proof so they can show their friends. The real takeaway is the interaction that you have with someone. People who say, don't meet your idols or your role models because they won't live up to what you have in your head. And
yeah.
I also know people who have met their idols and role models, and because the person takes the time, like you're saying, to interact with the person they're meeting and really just create that little moment, they walk away with it feeling like warm and fuzzy inside. And that definitely is a big part of what the Harry Potter community likes. We don't really care how big of a role you had in the movies or the books or whatever, but if you interact with us, I'm just saying, if you interact with us and you engage with the fandom, then it's fabulous. We love you.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, to me, it's, you know, all I try to do is match the enthusiasm that comes at me. And there's a lot of enthusiasm. And I love doing Comic-Con. I mean, genuinely, what's not to like? You go somewhere. People want to see you and talk to you. I mean, we all say we don't need validation from other people, but it's really nice. You know, there's sort of the great bits of it that you spend time with your friends and you meet people from everywhere. And the reality is that everybody could have a documentary made about them because everybody's got a story. So happens they chose me. But yeah, it's honestly, it's great. I've not had a negative sort of experience from the Potter fandom. Everybody's been thoroughly delightful.
That's good to hear that we're representing well.
So far, so good.
Do you have any favorite memories from some of the Comic-Cons that you've been to? Like anything that really stands out in your head?
I think the thing is, because you do so many, and some of them can be incredibly manic.
Oh yeah.
And you meet hundreds and hundreds of people, and you're sort of giving a performance because there's this level of expectation that I have on myself to bring something. And some of the interactions you don't remember because you can't.
It's
this sort of
in some kind of weird headspace, yeah.
Because it's a performance. You'll see in the documentary where they followed me around certain Comic-Con, see how lovely it is. I mean, if you take away the sort of the fan element when we're all in the green room just sort of chatting and mucking about or going for a drink afterwards or having maybe two glasses of something.
only two.
Yeah.
Cap it off.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, yeah, speak to Josh Herdman about that.
Well, send him over here. We're more than happy to speak with him. You send him here after we're done. You hang up and you tell him he's calling us next.
Yeah. I mean, we have some hilarious nights, you know, me and Nick and Josh and George and Chris and Ness and Rohan and Tolga and, you know, all these lovely, lovely people. So I don't think I could pick one because it's the whole thing is sort of a feeling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These wonderful, wonderful days of spending time with your friends. And, of course, with people who come at you and smile or cry.
Does that happen often?
Yeah, maybe they think I'm somebody else. it does, yeah. It does. People do cry sometimes because it's an emotional thing. If you've grown up with it. Because I think the reality is that people respond to Potter because they all recognize themselves in one of the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a big thing.
Very much their story.
Yeah.
To Hermione or to Ron or to Neville or whoever or even Harry. So they relate. And because it deals with themes of love and hope and loss, these sort of universal things, that's, you know, people come to it. So when they see someone for the first time that they've only ever seen on a 40-foot screen or a 40-inch TV screen, you can well understand why it might be a lot, particularly if it's meant so much to them.
Yeah.
Because it's got them through the difficult times or it's been the only thing that really understands them. You know, particularly when you're growing up, it's being a teenager is really tough.
I can agree with that.
And I think, you know, I'm in my mid-40s.
I thought you were 29.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, 29.
Yeah, just making just sure checking. We're on the same page here.
Yeah, that was what I mean, happened there. Yeah, to me, it's such a difficult time. And whatever comfort you can take, you know, from whatever you might be going through in your life with school and friends and family and all that, and going through all of these changes that are, you know, incredibly difficult. You know, the human brain doesn't fully evolve until it's 25. And yet we expect 18-year-olds to know what it is they want to do for the rest of their life.
Well, I mean, we start asking kids that are six what they want to do when they grow up, and it's like, okay.
You could be a firefighter tomorrow, for sure.
I said on our last episode I was going to be a tube of toothpaste when I grew up, so I have high ambitions for myself. Thank you very much.
How's that going so far?
So far, I'm working on it. I feel like very minty today. So that's the first step, you know, just like minty on the inside, and then I will emulate the tube as I go forward. But that's the plan.
Absolutely horrifying image.
Yeah.
And the reality is that I don't, you know, even if you're 40, whatever, or 50, whatever, and you want to, you can change your mind. I always said that I'd be an actor as long as I could get any work, but always as long as I kept loving it. And I still love it.
Yeah, that's important.
I'm not planning to change, but, you know, who's to say in the future? Who's to say?
Yeah. Now, I would like to know how you got your role in the Harry Potter movies as Frank, because I don't think that's something you've talked about quite yet.
Well, I was standing in on a film called Atonement with James McAvoy and Keira Knightley. Mm-hmm. So I was covering James, and we were up in, I think, somewhere in King's Lynn, which is sort of way, way north of London. So we were overnight, and we were doing night shoots up there. And I got a call from David Yates' office, and they were saying, oh, David wants you to come in test for this character in Potter. And I said, oh, yeah, that's great, but I'm busy, sorry.
Oh, no. That's not what we say when David Yates calls us.
No.
I was busy and I was tired. Anyway, I didn't really think anything of it. I was like, I'm busy, you know, good luck with it. And they called the next day and they said, I don't think you understand. David wants to see you, only you for this.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, right. So I spoke to the first assistant director on Atonement, who also ended up being the first assistant director on the Three Fantastic Beasts movies.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Josh Robinson. And I said, they want me to go down to Leavesden and test. And he said, oh, go, we'll cover you. It's fine, don't worry. I think we did a night shoot up in King's Lynn. I traveled down to Leavesden for my test with Lisa Wood, who played Alice. You know, David explained what it was that he wanted, what it was that we were trying to get across, this sort of the love that parents have for their child, but also the love they have for each other, which in such a short period of time. So we did it sort of in that sort of double take thing that I do to Lisa, to Alice. And that was great. And so, you know, I did that test, and we had the hair and the costume and that hideous jumper and all that sort of thing. The people seemed to like, I don't know why. And no, I didn't keep it.
It suits you.
Does it though? Ah, thanks, but no. Then I travelled, by which time the Atonement unit had moved up to Grimsby, which is way, way in the north of England, you know, for someone like me. I did my test and then travelled back up to Grimsby to rejoin the unit, and then did another night shoot. So I'd been awake for two nights and a day.
That sounds awful.
Quite a bit, yeah.
It was sort of bonkers. It was sort of the last 2 hours of being awake at sort of 3-4 o'clock in the morning. That's when you started to see stuff. You're like, whoa, sort of a bit trippy. And then obviously I didn't mess it up horribly. And then I became Frank. And then, yeah, then we shot the stuff with everybody. So it was, yeah, it was brief but sort of memorable. It gave me a story.
Yeah, and I would like to say that I'm not sure where your priorities lie, but saying no to David Yates straight out the gate is a pretty bold move, I would say.
What was I thinking? I mean, I was busy. I was doing this movie, so they'd had problems with their stand-ins. They weren't up to par. And so me and my friend Amy Irvin, who now works in clearances, which is every time you have something in a movie that is a real thing, it has to be cleared. So if it's a painting, permission. But we were really, really good at our job. So we got a call to say, can you come in and sort of do your thing? Yeah, so my mind was on this particular movie. You know, I was reading the book at the time, and it was, you know, it's a movie that I'm really proud to have worked on. You know, the whole 5-minute Steadicam shot that we did to recreate the Dunkirk beach is a sort of an incredible thing in movie history that is studied in film schools and so forth. Thank God they called back, though.
Well, one silly question. When you had the test and the chat with David, did he give you the famous finger? How do you make it again? The finger framing while looking at you?
What answer would make you happy? Because it was a long time ago. I can't remember.
When we interviewed John Campling, we got a very vivid story from him remembering the... Woo!
Yeah, he was very excited that he got that.
Yeah.
The thing is, David is very much an actor's director. Mm-hmm. So he knows what point he's going to cut on to you and, you know, to raise the emotions. And he's so good. Yeah, he'll just deal with you one-on-one or, you know, sort of two-on-one and is enthusiastic. You know, he bounces around the place like he wants to be there.
Yeah.
I've worked on plenty of big movies in all different capacities that where you have all the toys and props and the entire train set you could possibly want, and the people at the top seem to be bored by it.
Mm-hmm.
David certainly did Order of the Phoenix. You know, he was bouncing around the place. He was happy to be there. He wanted to create something that would outlive us all.
Yeah.
He's a lovely chap, and his wife, Yvonne, is the most glamorous person that I know. Fabulous. She's the epitome of the word fabulous. It's sort of a little family. I did the Three Beasts with David and Tarzan and Order of the Phoenix. So, you know, I've known him for
quite a while.
A long time.
Yeah. Which is sort of lovely, really. The thing that I'm sort of happy about is that they trust me. James, can you do this? Can you cover all of the 17 pages of Johnny's dialogue? Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, of course, I can do that.
Yeah.
No big deal.
I'll just do Johnny Depp for Ezra Miller.
No one knows who they are. It's not a big deal if I...
As you say, it goes back to that sort of, oh, it's fine, James can do it.
Yeah, people have confidence and trust and a sense of familiarity in working with you.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's been all right.
So in the films, we have only seen you in this short moment in the picture as Frank. But has there been any additional scenes that were not ending up in the movie that you had to film for the series?
There wasn't actually, no. I think the stuff into Mungo's was cut before it came to the shooting part, unfortunately. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe if you watch the documentary, Who is James Payson? Maybe there'll be a little surprise in there for people who missed that. Maybe. I don't know. I have to watch it, right?
We have actually tried to find a way to watch the documentary, but we couldn't.
Yes, it seems like it was only playing at that one film festival you were at, and we couldn't find it anywhere online to watch.
Yeah, so what they're doing, because of COVID times, some of it's been online.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the festivals we've chosen not to play the film online, so they can play it for the people who are voting, but we're not playing it online because obviously we want as many people to see it as possible. So yeah, we had a live screening
in June, right?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, thanks so much.
Yeah.
In Romford, which me and Oliver and John Schofield, the cinematographer, and met all the people there and had a lovely time. And it was the first time we saw the movie in a cinema to get real people's reaction to what the movie is. So we are doing more festivals for a bit. And there's obviously conversations with distributors, a release, and there might be a sort of limited release over here. If there's enough interest, then certainly to take it around Comic-Cons to do screenings for people there.
Yeah.
It's not just about me, it's got a lot of great Potter people in it. What I found interesting is the people like seeing behind the curtain.
Yeah.
And it's very much a behind the curtain of my life. And it, you know, it doesn't really help pull any punches. It's pretty honest. It's pretty brutal in places. And I was more than happy to do that because I trust Oliver to make the movie that he wants to make. It's funny. It's sad. It's hopeful. It's pretty much the best movie ever made, I would say. But
that's definitely not an unbiased, like definitely not a biased opinion.
Yeah, well, actually, what was interesting is that the bits that we all laughed at because you know we were party to it weren't necessarily the bits that the public laughed at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oliver was saying it's interesting because it made me realise there's sort of a lot of in joke that people will understand sort of in that circle, and then the public are laughing at something else. So it's very much a layered sort of piece that I think people can watch, and maybe it'll be helpful to people. Maybe to some people it'll be helpful. That's sort of the dream that.
Yeah.
Eventually, I think probably next year it'll end up on Amazon Prime or something like that. But there will be a release where the world can see it should they choose to.
Well, we definitely want to.
Yeah.
I'm sure I will insist that you do. I will sit you down with matchsticks in your eyes and make you watch it.
So this documentary that you made. How was it pitched to you? Because you said that the gentleman who directed it was the one who kind of approached you.
Yeah, so I'd known Oliver for 15 years or something, because we both worked for Snow Business.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Someone I've known for a long time. He's a trusted friend. I came back from Manchester in 2018 after a Comic-Con, and I was on a sort of a high. I'd had such a lovely time, and it was a big event for me, and people seemed to enjoy my nonsense. And he said to me, it was a side of you that I'd not seen before. It's really interesting. I've known this guy for all this time, but I've not really seen this sort of side to his life. And he said, I think I'd want to find out more. And I think the public might be interested in finding out more of what it's like to be this sort of jobbing actor who got fortunate a few times and to see maybe sort of behind the curtain, but, you know, the actual reality of what it's like to be you. And he said to me, is there anything you wouldn't talk about? And I said, there are a couple of things that I would leave off the docket, as it were. I don't cover in the documentary about my private life because everybody's got to have a limit.
Oh, yeah.
And he was absolutely fine with that. And I said, you know, just make the movie that you want to make. I trust you to make the movie that you want to make. Yeah, then we started filming, and now it's a thing that exists and will no doubt outlive me, which is sort of a bit mad, really.
Yeah.
But wonderful. And I've seen it 5 or 6 times now, so you see different things each time. But yeah, I'm so incredibly proud of what they've done. And the score, the music is amazing.
Oh, okay.
And the moments that they captured that I didn't really have a memory of. Do you find out the answer to who is James Payton? Maybe you do. Maybe you don't.
Throughout that process, filming this documentary, have you learned anything about yourself that you were not aware of before?
Well, I watched it the first time and I thought, God, I look a bit fat.
Well, you know, the camera adds 20 pounds or something like that, so.
Yeah, that's what they say. People seem to like me.
Yeah, they do.
I don't know why. When we went to the States, I wasn't really sure that sort of my brand of silliness would cross over. Mm-hmm. I'd like to think that's because I try to be honest.
Yeah.
But it's probably more to do with me just being amazing.
I think that's probably it.
Honest and humble.
Yeah, I'm just incredibly humble. Yeah, people seem to like me. It always sort of surprises me that people respond to my silliness. But I'm grateful that they do. I'm glad they like it. Long may that continue.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of a funny thing to have people that you don't know like you.
Yeah.
Just, you know, for sort of being this version of myself that I present.
Mel and I can identify with that on a very, very small scale. Very small. But I can agree with you in the fact that it's nice to just know that you are positively impacting people's lives who you may never even meet these people. But for some reason, you've brought some light into their day, just like you're watching that movie when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the sort of without wanting to be awful about it, that we're born and here we are on this planet. And the whole idea is, or at least should be, that when we die, we've left the planet in a little bit better state than when we arrived.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's the sort of the idea.
I learned that from the Girl Scouts.
Right. So, I mean, whether we succeed or not it's not really about success. It's about trying. Don't get me wrong. I fail as an actor. I fail as a human being. I fail fundamentally on all levels. But the failures, you know, at least the road to success is paved with those failures. Mm-hmm. You know, you sort of just have to do you, really. And if people like it, that's great. And if they don't, and if people don't like you, it's sort of none of your business. If they like you, that's great. If they don't, so what?
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to like you, and that's okay. And all fame is, any level of fame, your postman is famous because more people know the postman than knows.
I mean, honestly, that's a pretty valid point.
Yeah.
Is it? Well, no, it's just levels of it. You know, more people know who I am than I know. Okay. Mm-hmm. Same for you guys. And it's the same for a lot of people. It doesn't really mean anything. The thing that means something is just trying to leave the world a better place.
Because a ton of people can know who you are, but if you've done either nothing with that or something terrible, then it's not bringing anything into the world.
I'm not going to say that I've played people in my career who obviously
I was going to say this would be a good transition into
but yeah, some would argue that some of the characters I've played in my career have been the opposite of that.
Hitler.
See, that was great, wasn't it? That was seamless.
Yeah, what a seamless transition. Oh. Unplanned. Look at us, professionals here.
Because Juliana and me are also big Marvel fans. And
yes, we just finished Loki last week and we were like, oh, we were talking about it yesterday. We're probably going to talk more about it today.
I've not seen it yet. How is it?
Oh, it's good. I
really enjoyed it.
WandaVision's my favorite and then Loki's a close second.
I really like WandaVision. I thought it was really creative what they did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she's so, Elizabeth Olsen is amazing.
Yeah.
I love WandaVision. I thought that was great. The Winter Soldier and the Falcon one, I've watched it. Didn't really sort of draw me in too much. And Loki, I'll get to start.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think if you liked WandaVision, I think you're going to like Loki. It's more of that like mystery, trickery kind of thing that was going on with WandaVision.
Interesting. It's on my list of things to do.
We all have a long list, I suppose.
Yeah, I know. That being said, we have seen the movie that you were in as the lovely character of Hitler.
I was an American GI portraying Hitler in the USO. Yeah.
I remember watching the movie and I thought the guy that plays Hitler, he looks familiar. Couldn't put my finger on it. Where do I know this face from? Until it clicked and I was like, ah, there we go.
That's my entire career summed up.
And I felt really stupid afterwards because I was thinking I should have recognized immediately. That is the nice thing about being an actor, though, I think also, that you can look so versatile, so different, and people are not necessarily immediately recognizing you.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose it's the difference between a sort of a movie star, if you like, and a movie actor.
Yeah.
There can be a crossover between the two things, you know, Brad Pitt, Johnny Depp, you know, movie stars, but they're also movie actors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have characters that are very iconic and very different from who they are as a person.
Don't get me wrong, I'm in no way comparing myself to any of those people. But to me, it's when you sort of play a different character, you obviously you have to bring part of yourself to it,
mm-hmm.
less so with Hitler.
It's the mischievous expression in the face.
Yeah, I mean, when they cast me in that, so I auditioned for a different part in Captain America. And
okay.
So, and Joe Johns, oh yeah, you know, I knew Joe from The Wolfman because I'd covered Anthony Hopkins on that a couple of years earlier. And Joe said, oh great, yeah, James can do that, great. So then you go through this sort of process of a show and tell. So they cut your hair and sort of shave everything down. So I just have this moustache and this slicked hair and this 1940s suit that they put me in. And I walked on set to show Joe. And of course, all the people on set that I know are saying, hey, you look like Hitler. Joe comes on and goes, oh yeah, that's great. Okay, great.
That's what we needed.
2 weeks later, they say, oh, how would you feel about playing Hitler instead? To which I said, all right then. And then we went into that process of a real moustache and a hair and jack boots and that costume. And I went away when they said, you're going to be Hitler. I thought, well, I need to sort of do this justice, because at the time, we're sort of, at that time period of the movie, we're trying to pop the pomposity of that man himself. So we're satirizing him, we're mocking him.
Yeah.
So I went away and I watched some of his speeches on YouTube to sort of get his facial characteristics, even though all you need to do is wear the moustache and the hair.
Yeah.
And then sort of amped it up to that sort of ridiculousness and arrived on set and rehearsed with what I planned to do. And they didn't tell me not to, so I just did that. So I assumed they liked it. Yeah, and we shot that over the course of a week, I think.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so it was bonkers, really. It was a bonkers experience just to be sort of, because this was obviously in 2010 we made this. This was before Marvel became the thing that it is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like we were like, is Captain America going to work anywhere other than America, really? Is it? Well, I don't know. Well, you know, Marvel did Iron Man. That was very successful. You're like, yeah, maybe it will be. Here we are, however many years later. You're like, oh, yeah, they knew what they were doing. So, yeah, to be a part of that is bonkers, really. But wonderful, you know, because, again, that means so much to people, whatever capacity. And, yeah, it's all nice to have it on the CV, really. Oh, yeah, I did a Marvel. I did a Marvel.
Of all the punches that were thrown, was there one that accidentally really hit you in the face?
No, it was a very much a stage punch. There's sort of a big old safety gap of a foot.
Yeah.
But in fairness to Chris, he helped me up every time he put me down. Bless his heart. Nice chap.
How nice. That's good.
So it's good. Yeah. And the thing that was important, I think, is that obviously we're recreating the first Captain America comic book cover.
Mm-hmm.
What's really interesting, I think, is that comic book was released before the states entered the war. So it was very much a political statement at that time. It's not just this, oh, look, a cartoon, you know, comic book. It's saying, you know, we need to do the right thing here. And we all know how that worked out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to me, it's sort of a fascinating piece of history that we managed to recreate.
As a German myself, I am very aware of that history. And I have to say that this is honestly one of the rare portrayals where I think that is actually really funny. And I don't feel like I have to cringe when I watch that, because you can do that in different ways. And some of them are good, some are not good. But I do have to say it was really funny. So I enjoyed that.
Thank you. That's what we're going for. Have you seen the movie Look Who's Back?
No.
I think I have.
What is it about?
So that's about Hitler coming back. Really well done. And it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, satire is a great way of sort of reducing these awful characters that we have in the present day down to, yeah, the size they really are. And we all know there's plenty of terrible people in all of our countries. But the reality is, fortunately, the reality is that there are far more good people in the world than there are bad. Otherwise, if it were the case, then nobody would have been screaming out against the racism that happened in the football match the other week.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would have been screaming out about Trump. Nobody would have been screaming out about any of the awful people. There are always going to be people. And the reality is that's the majority. It's just the minorities shout louder. And especially with social media these days, it's so much easier to. But they're still very much in a minority. I know it's a divisive world, and you know, the press and the media want that sort of clash. Say, oh, look at these terrible people.
Yeah, it sells better.
Yeah, and I think as human beings, we sort of need to be aware of their angle coming at it. Nobody is going to accept that sort of behaviour, which is good, you know, which is it's a sort of a positive thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, Marvel versus Harry Potter versus everything else that you've been on, do you have like a favourite set that you have worked on? Just generally speaking, either a favourite movie or a favourite set?
It's a good question. I think it's difficult to answer because each person as a director brings something different to the table. And each set, although it has a lot of familiar faces on it, there's a sort of a different atmosphere. You cast the crew as well as the cast. Mm-hmm. In terms of the like the physical sets, how they look, I mean, obviously the Fantastic Beasts sets are designed by Stuart Craig, who did Potter, are amazing. You know, you see these things and you go, oh my God, I'm literally in New York.
Mm-hmm. Or wherever you are in the third movie, maybe you would like to tell us where that because they're making us wait till 2022.
Skegness.
Oh no.
So yeah, all of those incredible sets, and you know, the Hogwarts sets and all that sort of stuff, or Dumbledore's classroom in the second movie,
are
amazing. But equally, the Sherlock Holmes set we had were brilliant. They all have something to them, even the sort of the stuff we do present day, like Creation Story. Mm-hmm. These are incredibly talented people making a movie on a shoestring of $2 million, £2 million. Nothing in over the course of a month, you know, which is barely enough to feed the crew of a movie like Fantastic Beasts or a Marvel movie.
Yeah, that's true.
So sometimes the issue is almost having too much money because you can solve any problem by throwing money at it. The most valuable thing is time.
Yes.
If you've got more money, you've got more time. So when you don't have enough money, you have to, some on occasion, you have to be more creative. And I work in movies that have cost $200 million to make, and I've worked on movies that cost 200 pennies to make. They're all the same. It's just levels of people and toys that you have.
Yeah.
Fundamentally, you know, you want to tell a story, and it's how you tell that story and what you can do with all the equipment and technology that we have these days to tell that story. Because the camera is a character. And sometimes people forget that actually it's the most important thing is the story. Yeah, and telling that story through this medium.
It's really those moments where you're forced to be creative to solve a problem that I feel like the best things come out of, which is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, they can. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's lovely to work on things where money is no object. But it's also lovely to work on things where money is an issue, because sometimes it can be more freeing sometimes. You know, with making Marvel movies, you have to trust the machine to get you through because they know what they're doing. Whereas other things, there's always room for creativity, and regardless of whatever size production you happen to be on. I like sort of doing a mixture of both. I love doing these big, incredible movies that will be around long after I'm gone. But I also love doing these sort of smaller movies with not smaller stories, just less budget, and finding ways to sell that story to an audience in whatever capacity you can. And to me, the whole process is very, very simple of telling a story. That's what you want to do for making a movie, and tell the story that you want to tell. And the rest is just stuff to me.
Yeah.
Is there one role that you would love to play sometime that you have not been able to do yet?
Yes.
And would you like to tell us?
Would you like to tell us what it is?
Yes.
Or can you?
Is it in Fantastic Beasts 3 or 4 or maybe?
I wish. I would love to play Richard Hannay, who is a character from a movie or from a book called The 39 Steps, written by John Buchan.
Okay.
And this movie has been made several times. Hitchcock made it in 1936, I think. It was made in the 50s.
Uh-huh.
Made in the 70s, I think it was the 70s. And it was also made, there was a BBC version of it that wasn't very good.
So it's due for a good reboot then.
Yeah, so this movie is sort of based on mistaken identity. And the reality is the 39 Steps is a MacGuffin. 39 Steps has been different each time.
Ah.
I love that sort of adventurous romp sort of thing. I'd have loved to have a crack at Arthur Dent from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Ooh, nice.
Oh, that'd be a good one.
But, you know, that was made back in, 2005 with Martin Freeman?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So unlikely that would happen. And I might be getting too old for it as well. I want to play people who are layered. What's difficult is that sometimes you sort of do an audition and there's not much more to the part than the dialogue. for me, I think, well, for this 2 minutes or 30 seconds, this person is a real person. I want to create something as real as it can possibly be in that time period. I love sort of mucking about with characters and seeing what works and what doesn't work, what plays and what doesn't play. And it's, you know, it was my dream as a young man to become an actor and to make a living and only make a living from acting. And I'm still chasing that dream. And I don't plan on stopping. It'll give me up before I give it up. So, yeah, I mean, if you've got any suggestions, give me a shout and I'll speak to my agent. Oh, well, I should have said myself in the documentary, Who is James Payton, shouldn't I? But there we are.
Yes. I mean, well, that would have been the obvious answer. I do enjoy your answer, and I do like the point that you made about bringing like a character to what is essentially just lines on a page, because I know that when I've done theater in the past, the best thing is fleshing out who this person is. What's their favorite color? What's their mother's name? I don't know what their favorite flower is, but you can create that all for yourself, and it gives whoever this person is such a complex backstory. Even if you only have two lines or you're just like not saying anything at all, you can reflect that in your eyes and your expression and everything.
We got quite a lot of press for my performance in Creation Stories, which is, again, it's quite a small part, but it's quite a memorable moment in the movie. And my agent said, what is it, James, that you can just turn up and do one day on a movie and get all the attention? I was like, imagine what I could do if they gave me an entire movie. And she said, mess it up, probably. And I was like, yeah, probably. It's been nice to hear. I mean, some people haven't liked it, but I suppose, you know, when Creation Stories came out and the press started coming in, you know, I phoned Nick and I gave him a call and, you know, have a chat. And he said to me, James, the thing is, mate, right, everyone who doesn't like the movie, well, they're just, aren't they? I'm like, you know what, Nick? I think you might be right. I think that's what they are. They didn't like it because of that word.
Yeah.
I probably can't say it because they're children.
Yeah. Mel would have bleeped you out.
Yeah. Oh, I should have said it.
I mean, you can go back and say it if you want. She can just bleep you out again. Meh.
No.
There we go.
So I don't know. Again, I don't know what the question was. I was just rabbiting on about something. So, again, you know, none of us should need validation.
But it's nice to have it.
Of course it is, yeah. I mean, anybody who says it is a liar. You know, it's always nice to be told that people like you or enjoyed what you've done. That's nice, but it's not the reason that you do it. You do it first and foremost for you and hope people respond to it. And if people do respond, that's great. And if they don't, it's not for them.
Exactly.
They're just wrong.
They're just wrong. Yeah. I work as a dietitian and people obviously tell me they're food perfect and stuff like that. And everyone's like, ew, they don't like things. But my big thing that I say to people is everyone has their own taste buds and everyone's taste buds are different. And that's kind of how it works with movies and people and everything else too. Everyone just has different taste buds.
Yeah.
Bringing it back to Harry Potter for a moment here, has there anything happened while being on set that you would like to tell us about that has been specifically silly or that went wrong or was really funny and memorable that comes to mind? Or Fantastic Beasts, of course.
For Potter, it was very much... So Michael Gambon was there the day I was. And I'd known Michael from Wives and Daughters from the BBC sort of 6 or 7 years prior. And I think I'd bumped into him once since then. But he saw me and he said, well, you get around, don't you? And Fantastic Beasts is, you know, they're three very different movies.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when we had Dan Fogler and Brontis, who played, oh God, what's his name? The old dude with the Philosopher's Stone.
Oh, Nicholas Flamel.
Flamel, yeah. So we were doing a scene in Flamel's house. So we're just rehearsing it at this point. So the whole idea is that David will rehearse with the actors to get what they want across. We all pile in and watch it so we can recreate it so they can come back and do it. I don't think we've ever laughed so much of just what Brontis and Dan were doing that day. It was just the funniest thing. We were all in floods of tears.
His little jog back to the back head side of the house.
Yeah. And Dan sort of trying to get past him and going on, how old are you? You look great. I mean, it's all, you know, sort of twatting about with a wand on the back lot of New York on the first beat, fighting my friend.
Yeah.
So I was covering Colin. My friend Amy was covering Catherine, and we're having this great old wand fight.
Oh boy!
Oh, that he gets his wand. Oh, okay.
Oh, that's nice.
This is from the second Fantastic. This is our crew gift.
Oh wow! Okay.
Oh, nice.
This is the statue they go under into.
She had to the French Ministry of Magic.
Yeah. So there we are, sort of having this great, big, proper
duel.
Yeah. The first AD are watching just to make sure the timing's right and that it all works as a shot. Mm-hmm. And Josh gets on the radio and says, James, because that's how he talks, could you possibly take this any more seriously? Because, you know, because we were having such a laugh, and David loves it if you get involved, David loves it if you commit to it.
Yeah.
And you know, the stuff with Johnny on the second one was great. And I know there's awful lot of column inches being written about that particular situation. I have my opinion about that. And mm-hmm. I know some of the other actors that I've spoken to from those movies have their opinion mm-hmm. about that, which is generally the same as mine. But having worked with Johnny, I found him to be interested and interesting and funny, professional, kind, and a thoughtful human being, and an incredible actor.
Yeah.
The rest of it, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And neither was anybody else. People were talking about that situation years ago like they knew.
Yeah.
I read the court transcript. Mm-hmm. I listened to the audio.
Yeah.
I know, I recognize gaslighting when I see mm-hmm. it. It is an awful thing to do to people, but yeah, I have my opinion on that particular situation. But as I said, for me, I can only judge someone by how I find them, mm-hmm. regardless. And Johnny was great to work with.
I know Mel and I both, we appreciated and liked his performance in the second movie. So that's, in the context of that movie, that's really all that matters, is his performance as that character. The rest of the drama can be left outside the theater.
Yeah, exactly. That's a conversation for 10 years when dust has settled, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still kind of in the midst of that.
So what can we expect from you in the future? Is there any big projects you're working on right now that we can possibly see you in, except for your documentary that we have already talked about?
Well, as you know, you can see me, North America, Canada, in fact, is getting Creation Stories as of the 20th of July.
Oh, okay.
By the time this is out, that'll be available. Mm-hmm. I would imagine by the time this goes to air, Creation Stories will have been released in North America, in the United States. It's currently out in Australia. It's out in a bunch of places, in Europe and over here. It's out in the UK, obviously. In Australia, they were fortunate enough to have cinema screenings. At the moment, it's streaming online. Mm-hmm. We're hoping that the American release is a cinema release, if it can be. I've completed a film a few months ago that we started before the pandemic, one of my low budget sort of comedy spoof movies called Dan Hawk Psychic Detective.
Oh, okay.
Super no money, but great fun to do. I play a character called Gavin Lloyd Goldstein III, who is a washed up TV actor from the 90s who, it's a bit close to home, who gets a part in a movie. It's a sort of a comedy spoof horror thing.
Oh, okay.
And I'm also, we're trying to finish, obviously the pandemic put certainly the low budget movies that I do into difficulty, but I'm making it, I'm doing a movie which is about, set in sort of the early 19th century, about the race to the pole.
Oh, okay.
The Arctic pole, or at least that's what you think it's about.
Oh.
It's lots of people talking like that, which is great. I'm really enjoying that process.
Yeah.
Being able to be creative in how we make things, and there's a lot of miniatures involved in it. At the moment, I'm sort of, aside from pushing Creation Stories and the documentary, Who is James Payton, which is me, I'm auditioning a lot for a bunch of different, some really big movies.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
And some smaller things. And to me, it's not really about getting that job as such. It's about, the hardest part about being an actor is getting in the room. Mm-hmm. And thanks to the work that my agent has done over the last sort of 2-3 years and all the work that we've done together, it's starting to pay off in terms of I'm getting in the room. Although not really, because we're all doing self-tapes because there's no room at the moment.
Yeah.
Global pandemic. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah. We heard about it.
Yeah. It was all over the news.
Yeah.
That's going really well. At this point, it's just a numbers game. You know, I'm sure there'll be some more sort of stand-in cast reading work if I choose to go back to that. You know, we're obviously getting busier with the snow business as well. So we'll be doing that. But yeah, it's at the moment, I'm sort of just trying it all, seeing what happens. I can't complain. And of course, Comic-Cons will be back.
Yeah, that'd be exciting.
So me and Wally will be in Brighton on the 14th of August. Obviously, this we were in Brighton.
How was it?
Amazing. That's in the
past. It was great.
Obviously, you know, the Comic-Cons, they were cancelled. You know, obviously, there's conversations that are way above my pay grade. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, so hopefully that will come back and we can all sort of get back together again and see what happens. But yeah, at the moment, it's going all right.
Well, that's great. That sounds awesome. It definitely sounds like not only you and your agent kind of getting your name out there with auditioning, but I'm sure all this other work you do with movies is definitely helping getting you into the room, which I see in the future many movies with James Payton in them, not just the one that's self-titled.
I'll take it if anybody offers. I'll even do TV, Marvel, if you want to. Oh. Look, Marvel have done a show about pretty much everything.
Oh, which Marvel character would you want to play?
So, I mean, aside from Iron Man, so why don't we do, this is what I want to say to Marvel.
Okay, Marvel, are you listening? James is proposing to you right now.
What happened to the actor who played the USO Hitler in the first Captain America? So then obviously, you know, Captain America's gone off and he stopped doing the USO show. So mm-hmm. What happened to the actor who was in the show? Did he go off and have a career in movies or shows? Mm. What happened to him? Let's find out more about that character. That's definitely something that people want.
Mm. So you don't want to play a superhero. You want to just play the version of yourself that you already play.
He might be a superhero you don't know yet. This might be his origin story, how he becomes one.
Well, I'm trying to think, what superhero would he turn into, Mel? What do you think?
I think I'd have to go to the gym or something. I work out every day these days because I'm 29 and things have gone south. So
things happen when you almost hit 30, you know.
Don't really want to ever put sort of a, this is the thing I'd like to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though I've already done this in this interview already. Because I don't know. I don't know what the future will bring. And that's okay. Good, bad, or indifferent. You know, the life is peaks and troughs. You know, everybody says that they're looking for happiness. But I don't really think that's true. I think happiness is always fleeting. What we're all sort of searching for is contentment. Sort of being satisfied with what we have, what we've achieved, and all that sort of thing. I like the road that I'm on.
That's nice.
And I'll see what happens. You know, and it might get worse, it might get better, or it might stay the same. I don't know, but I can't worry about things that I can't control.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Just like a great scholar once said, if you worry, you only suffer twice, or something along those lines.
Yeah. It's hard to take that on board, because of course we worry. All manner of things, from matters of the heart to the matters of the head. Sometimes, yeah, you have to sort of take a step away from it and say, you know what, in 100 years, less than 100 years, no one's going to care.
Yeah. What I always say is you can only run the mile you're in. You can only be in this moment, essentially.
Yeah. Living in the, there's a lot to be said for living in the moment. You know, that's what actors try to do is to be in that moment. And that's all we can all do. Just be present in your life.
Yeah. And that's the hardest thing to do too, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we, you know, we all, although we try not to, you know, they say, what is it? Comparison is the thief of joy. We compare ourselves to our peers. And again, their life is their life and their journey is their journey.
Yeah.
But, you know, people say to me, oh, you know, have you any advice for being an actor? So I can give you some advice that helped me, but it's not going to necessarily help you because your journey is your journey. And that's okay. So you just have to, we all have to find our own way. And sometimes take advice, but also know when not to take advice.
Yeah.
Or take it on board, but we can dismiss it. That's okay. That's okay too. Nobody should be offended by that.
Yeah. You have to know who you are too and what's going to benefit you.
Yeah. And that's very much a lifelong journey.
Oh, yes. Very much so.
I've still got no idea. If only there was a documentary.
If only there was a movie out there that could tell me who I was.
I think with that, we are wrapping up the main discussion, right?
Yeah, unless, James, do you have anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with? Any words of wisdom, final stories, anything that they should know about you?
Okay. I mean, I've given you most of my good stuff already. But here it is.
Okay.
What am I going to say? I don't know. I'm 45 years old. I don't really know what's going on. And that's perfectly normal.
And I think that is absolutely fabulous.
That is great.
That was perfect.
If you still have a little bit of time, we always play one game with our guests that you have the chance to collect points for the guest tally.
Ooh,
yeah, if you like to.
But I don't want you to because I want to win. So the game is called Are You Poffin' Kiddin' Me? Well, the way that the game works is that each person has one fact that they tell to the group, and then the group must vote if that person is telling the truth or puffing with them. And then each of us who is not giving a statement gets to ask that person giving the statement one question. So it's kind of like, is it a lie? Is it a truth? And then we guess. If you get it correct, you get a point. If you get it wrong, you don't.
We usually let our guest start. So if you have a fact about you for us. Truth or lie, you choose. We have to figure out, are you puffing with us or not?
That's good. That's good. So now I've got to think of a... Will you go first if you've got one?
Okay. When I was 10, I auditioned for a TV show on a local TV channel.
Mm.
It was WGBH is the TV channel. It's the local Boston, Massachusetts TV channel. And I did not get in. And I was very, very upset about this.
And now I ask you questions.
Yes.
What was the show you were auditioning for?
Zoom. I wanna zoom a zoom a zoom a zoom. It was this show that was kind of a STEM, like science and math and everything based show, but they made it fun. And you got to be a cast member. And there were like 10 to 12 cast members each season. Very, very 90s. Super 90s themed, like all these neon colors.
Yeah.
All this stuff. It was actually, that show specifically was based out of Boston, but it was actually aired across all of the United States.
Wow.
So if you made it there, then you were kind of like low-key kid famous.
And how many people who did that show went on to be stars of today?
I don't really think any of them did, honestly.
So you didn't miss out.
No. It would have just been fun, though, because I do know one person who was on it who went to my high school, and he was like a celebrity in high school. Everyone knew him.
Was he unbearable?
No, he actually was very nice. His mom was the health teacher, too.
Oh, nice.
And she was great.
And it was called Zoom?
Yes, it's called Zoom.
And they had adult presenters as well, or was kids?
No, it was just the kids. It was a cast of kids.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah, what do we think? Is she lying, or?
That's the truth.
Okay, James thinks I'm telling the truth.
I have heard you sing that song before.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite, it literally was my favorite show.
Okay, I think I'm gonna say that it's a lie.
You think it's a lie? Why do you think it's a lie, Mel?
I'm just gonna go the opposite of James.
Okay, so it is a lie. I did not. My mom wouldn't let me audition. She wouldn't. I only live an hour from Boston, but she wouldn't bring me in. But I did know about everything else about that was true, except for the fact that I never actually got to audition because my mom wouldn't take me into Boston to do it. So I remember I was mad because my friend Mary got to go audition.
Uh-huh.
Mary's a
bitch. Oh, yeah. We don't like her.
James, do we have a fact or should I go next?
Okay, I'll go.
Okay.
During this interview, I received a voice note from Georgina Leonidas, Katie Bell from Harry Potter. Is that true or false?
Ooh. I want to say it's true. I feel like you guys are friends.
I did see that you have been on the phone a couple of times shortly.
Yeah.
Have you? You were just reaching for, was I doing this?
No, you were like doing something like this and looking up and down. So I think you were on your phone typing something.
I would say that this is my phone here.
But that doesn't mean you can't have two phones.
Oh, that's true. That is true. I can't have two phones. Yeah.
If you got a voice message, then you could have not listened to it because you were talking to us and had us in your ears.
Yeah, but you could like flipped it up and just been like, okay, I'll listen to it afterwards.
Yeah, that could be. Maybe he wrote back, hey, I am doing a thing here. I'm going to answer you later. I think it's true.
I think it's true.
It's absolutely false.
Oh, no.
By which I mean it's true.
Oh, it's true.
It is true.
So we both got a point.
Fooling us.
Couldn't think of a damn thing. But it popped up that she sent me a voice note.
Okay.
Did she? Or did she not?
True or false? I mean, that met the requirements, that met the criteria that we gave you, so...
I'm doing horribly at this game.
Well, you still have a chance to get a point from my fact. When I was a teenager, I got the chance to actually swim with dolphins. Now, I am someone who's quite afraid of swimming. Still, I wanted to do it anyway. And everyone was assuring me it's gonna be fine. But when I was in the water, I think that they sort of smelled my fear and actually attacked me. And I was very quickly out again. Nothing really happened. But for some reason, this one dolphin really didn't like me. And the funny thing is that my Patronus is actually a dolphin. When I initially found out it's a dolphin, I was really not happy about it for several reasons, but that was one of the reasons that I have had this bad experience.
Where was this?
We were on holiday in the north of Germany, and we were visiting my friend who had moved up there. So we were visiting friends from kindergarten.
And were they, it was a water park, was it?
Yeah, it was this, what do you call it?
Like an
An
aquarium?
aquatic zoo or something like that?
Enjoy the way you say it, aquatic.
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 Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Okay. Aquatic.
I know that Mel was not super happy when she got her dolphin Patronus,
No,
so.
I wasn't. I like it now, but
Yeah, it's been a process.
yeah.
I also know that Mel is not someone to really jump into kind of iffy situations per se, and I could definitely see you being like low-key forced by the people you were with to partake in this. So that seems very on character with you, Mel. So I'm kind of thinking that this is true because I could definitely see you doing something like this. You're nodding your head, which makes me think that I'm probably wrong, but I kind of want to say that it's true.
I'm going to say that it's false because I quite like, because well, you've obviously said that it's true, and also I'd quite like to get 1 point.
You might as well try.
You say it's false, and Juliana says it's true.
Yes.
Yeah, I think false, yeah.
Okay. He's just double checking to make sure you're not doing using
Well,
his lie detector eyes.
one of you is right and one of you is wrong, of course.
Yes,
Who is
and
it? Well, congratulations. James, you got a point. It is
ah,
not
damn it.
true.
Yay, me.
Yeah. So it is true. I am afraid of swimming. I can swim, but I'm afraid. I have been nearly drowned when I was a kid. I would be afraid that would happen though if I would swim with
Well, see, that's
dolphins.
why it seems so like believable, because that is like it feels like how you would react to the situation, Mel.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, you know, I could have gone either way, because obviously your lie is based on a truth.
Or a semblance of a truth.
Yeah.
Both of your lies
Yes.
based. Mine was just the truth, because I'm a very honest sort of chap.
Usually we are too.
I will say that the guests, generally speaking, have a hard time lying to us, and I would
Yeah.
say at least 70% of the guests have just straight up told the truth.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't think of a lie, really.
Yeah, especially when you're put on a spot.
I should have just said, "Oh, Chris Rankin just sent me a voice note, didn't I?"
We would have believed that too.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're all winners here, aren't we?
Yes.
Yeah, I have gotten 2 points though, and you both have gotten only 1 point. I want to point
So,
that out.
but together we have 2 points, and there's two of us and only one of you.
Yes, so by
Yeah.
proxy and number of people here, who could beat you up,
So,
Mel?
that's just science.
yes. So, by the point this episode comes out, I will make an addition on what the current status of the tally is. Here are the current points for our tally. The guests continuously lead with 27 points. Juliana has 16 points, and I have 12. But just now, for you to know, the guests are currently leading, so you gave them an extra point, so congratulations, that's very good. I'm sure you guys are still leading until we come up to this episode.
Probably. Yeah.
Is it a lot of the time it's just sort of a 2-on-1 situation?
We've had a few guests where there have been like two people. We had that 4-person group. Most of the time it's one guest. But we like to gang up on our guests and make them feel inferior. Yes, that's what you're asking.
You did a marvelous job with me. I feel incredibly inferior.
Oh, good.
Well, you know, I'm just a generally an inferior sort of chap.
So, wrapping up, would you like to remind our listeners where they could find you?
Yes.
Yes, you can find me on MySpace. I'm kidding, you can't.
That's where I hang out the most. Don't discount MySpace.
Is it still going?
I have no idea. I'd love to
Me
find out if
either.
my old profile was still there.
Friends reunited. No, what am I? So on Instagram, I am the James Payton, and you can see lots of pictures of me, and I do regular stories, not the all right stories anymore. Although they are, most of those are still on the highlights reel. Most of it's just sort of little edits that I do of some of the self-tapes that I've done over the years with music attached to it. The James Payton on Instagram and Mr. James Payton on Twitter. Twitter, you can stay up to date with my comings and goings and adventures that I have. Instagram, there's also an Instagram for the documentary. I don't know if I mentioned that, which is who is James Payton. Yeah, so all of those things, I'll keep you updated if you're at all interested in what I'm doing in the next stage of my life, the second half
Yeah.
of my life.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said that Who is James Payton will be coming to theaters potentially in Canada soon?
Canada is Creation Stories.
Oh, Creation Stories. I'm sorry.
Life of Alan McGee, who discovered Oasis. Me playing Tony Blair.
Mm-hmm.
A version of Tony Blair. But the Telegraph called Simpering, which is what we were going for. Written by Irvin Welsh, directed by Nick Moran. Irvin Welsh, who wrote Trainspotting, alongside his writing partner, Dean Kavanagh, directed by Nick, with Ewan Bremner starring as Alan McGee, and lots of Nick's friends, which is wonderful, and it's brilliant. And that'll be, yeah, that's coming out soon. Well, it's been out now, isn't it? Because yeah. this is July.
This is the future! Woo! Welcome.
God, wouldn't it be awful if I wasn't? Well, I mean, not for you guys.
That would be probably a low-key, at least, scarring experience, I feel like.
Yeah, good luck, everybody.
Please stay alive between now and when this comes out. This is just me from the current asking you in the future to not be dead.
I'll try.
Okay, thank you.
So you can see that soon, and obviously then it'll be available on DVD and Blu-ray and streaming, I imagine.
Yeah.
The documentary, we want to make sure as many people can see it as possible, so you can see behind the scenes. Obviously, it's got me in it, it's got Chris Rankin, it's got Wallace Amond, it's got our agent Kay Freeman, it's got Josh Herdman, Georgina Lee Nidas is in it, Rowan Gosebed is in it, Nick Moran, lots and lots of people that you know are in it, not just Tony Slattery is in it, the UK people, lots of other lovely, lovely people may remember from certain film.
Yeah,
give it a watch. Love to know what the general public think of me.
Yeah. Well, I know once I can stream it here or see it here, I definitely will be going.
Well, you never know. If we find ourselves over there at LeakyCon or whatever, then maybe, just maybe there'll be a screening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But hopefully.
Well, if you ever come to a LeakyCon Boston, I'll make sure I come over and say hi.
I'd love to. Somebody call Melissa. Melissa, I'm available.
Sign me up. They have to put it back in Boston first. That's the first step. They haven't scheduled one in Boston yet. But yes, that would be lovely. Thank you so much for joining us, James. This has been so wonderful.
I hope I haven't taken too much of your time.
Oh, not at all.
Oh, no. We're here all day. We're here all day. Mel and I are probably going to go chat for hours after this anyway. So
why not?
Yeah. Our usual Sunday.
You have your friend here. You might as well spend some time with them.
Yeah.
Exactly. The most important thing in this crazy spinning world of ours is love.
One last thing I still mention is that a friend I recently made is named Charlotte, and she has a fan club for you.
Oh, so I hear. Yeah, she told me.
Yeah, and I'm supposed to say hello to you and send you greetings.
Oh, hi.
So we have gotten to know each other recently.
I've met Charlotte several times over the last few years, and she's been very supportive of my career, and for Wallace as well, and John Campling as well. So yeah, thanks very much, Charlotte. It's appreciated.
I'm sure that's going to mean a lot to her to hear that.
Yeah, it will. Well, thank you so much for having the time and spending your Sunday evening with us. That was very nice of you. And we can't wait to see more of you. Yeah, it was very lovely.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for having me on.
And now we know who James Payton is.
Yes.
He is a very truthful person. Very nice.
Debatable.
I mean, maybe that's the reality is maybe that's just what I want you to think. I could be awful.
That could be, but I can live with that thought. It's okay.
Oh, cool. As long as you can live with it. Good, I'm so glad. Thank you so much for having me. I've had great fun.
Yeah,
us too.
We hope you have a lovely rest of your day.
And you too.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'll see you again. See you on the flip side. See you when we see each other.
Yes. Yeah. See you at LeakyCon Boston, whenever that is.
Hey!
Bye.
Bye.
Good to Thanks again. Bye-bye.
And welcome back, listeners. It is just Mel and I at this point.
Hello!
We would like to hand it... I'm lying. I'm sorry. I would like to hand it over to the other person who has just joined us. Buttercup, would you like to join us for a moment and give us your question of the week?
Of course, my dear. But what question do we have this week?
I have no idea. I can't remember.
Maybe we shall come up with something in 3, 2, 1. Now, while Juliana is in Orlando visiting the Wizarding World, why don't you send us all your burning questions for her? We will then include them for our upcoming episode number 45, in where Juliana is giving us a full review of her time at Universal.
Thank you very much, Buttercup, for that lovely question of the week. Listeners, if you would like to answer that question, please head on over to our social media or send us an email at puffcastpod@gmail.com and hit up James if you would like on any of his social media platforms, like he mentioned up above. So, if you would like to get in contact with us, you can listen to us on all platforms where podcasts are found. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PuffCastPod. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/PuffCast and also on TikTok at PuffCast. And like I said earlier, you can email us at PuffCastPod@gmail.com. Go ahead, send us an email. Tell me your favorite pizza topping. I want to know. Support us on Patreon and you can get some exclusive benefits like bloopers, access to our exclusive Facebook group, stickers, and also help us donate to charity every month, which when this episode comes out, the next episode, we will be announcing who our charity donor is for that month. So, listeners, thank you so much for listening. And like our friend Unikitty, if you would like to leave us a 5-star review, we would love to read it here on the show and potentially send you some stickers and other goodies. So, until next time, stay puffy.
And badger on. Oh, we're done with recording? Okay. Because I really have to blow my nose. I'm still sick. Okay. Stop.